Today's daf, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, is daf Nun. We got up to Ravina Omar on the sixth line. And so, actually, the interesting issue begins with, as we began yesterday, with the question of what would be the halacha in terms of this relationship between Hatmona and the concept of Muktzah and the concept of Daita Yelui, or Hiktsuye Midaita. So up until now, we were talking about what do we do with things that were used for Hatmona, which are Muktzah, and then you have to move on Shabbos in order to get to the contents. That's how our Mishnah opened up the entire question. But this raised the question of whether the actual fact of using something for Hatmona would be actually enough to take off any tzad of Muktzah from it, because essentially you were being miyachid it for use. So then we had Rava yesterday. We had different ways of understanding Rava. We ended up saying was that Rava was saying that if you were miyachid something for Hatmana, and only then you're allowed to move them. But otherwise, we would assume that they would be Muktzah. That's what we wanted to say that Rava said. We brought a raya from Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Yosef and Shaul, that this was exactly the point. Something that was miyuchad lahatmana, you are allowed to be metaltel. However, not everybody goes along with the change that we made in the way that we reported Rava, because Ravina Amar, actually what Rava said is correct, the way we understood it before. And as far as the Talmud that had just come in, the Bar Beirav, who was there for the first day and had proved that Rava was wrong from the Mishnah, he made a mistake. He didn't understand the Mishnah, because actually, Rava was not referring to the case in the Mishnah. Please, Daniel, mute yourself. He was referring to a different case than the way that the Mishnah appears to be, because the truth is there's two parts to the Mishnah. When it says in the Mishnah that you can't move it, which the Talmud said seems to be a raya against Rava, that you would not allow to be moved, even though it was miyuchad for Hatmona, that's true. But that particular case in the Mishnah, that was referring to shel heptek shanu. Those were things that were used in a heptek. Now, a heptek is basically you could learn that it's, I think it's more than most learn that it just means an otsar, meaning that it was put aside in a warehouse. But in order to understand the concept of warehouse, according to Rashi, is that things were put aside in an Amazon warehouse. Because the way Rashi understands it, it's not just that we store things. It's that we store things in a very exact way so that they can be picked out by robots for quick delivery. Because Rashi says the entire thing is basically a question of ma'arechet, which means that everything has its precise place. It's not just that you piled it into a room. So once it's in that kind of warehouse where it's immediately available for delivery, that's already up against the market. And for that, for sure, such a thing is going to be Muktzah. Rava wasn't talking about that case. Rava was talking about the general meaning of the Mishnah, not the case where we started talking about, okay, what would we do if it were shel heptek? Then what would we do? That's true, that over there, of course, it's not enough just the fact that the person was using them for the Hatmana. There it would be true that, of course, we would have had to change, but Rava wasn't talking about that, but the way that we changed Rava would have made sense, that you could have done something to be miyachid them for Hatmana. Tanya namiyachi, and it's also clear from a Braita that there's a difference between an Amazon warehouse and Stam putting things away in the garage. That Gizei Tzemer shall heptek in metaltelin otam. So even though that type of storage, you're not allowed to move, but imit kinan ba'al habayit lishtamesh ben metaltelin otam. If you did something to make it clear that you're going to use them, then they're no longer muktzah. Now we go 180 degrees in an opposite direction. Because what we've been doing until now is we've been trying to figure out, according to Rabbi Shimon, how much haktza'ah mida'atcha is considered to be kitsia that should be eno muchan l'Shabbos. So we had, of course, the things that are, by definition, not part of the Shabbos milieu, things that would never be used, like stones and stuff like that. Then we had the question of how much would it take besides your lack of intent to use something, to be miyachid it. We had come out before, well, the cases that we had about Rabbi Shimon saying such a thing were only cases where they were involved also with either an iser, remember, such as it was uktzul mitzvah, which is not particularly a Shabbos issue, or it was something that you had gone out of your way to set up, like the kara that was full of shemen, but you did something that would have made it usser. The other case was you did something that made it unusable. That was the cases of taking it up to the roof to dry, in which it would spoil in the interim. But just deciding that you're not going to use it would not have been enough. We came out, according to Rabbi Shimon, to create a status of inam and amuchan, because he doesn't hold of mukta as that extension. Now we're going to the full opposite. How about something that definitely was mukta, according to Rabbi Shimon? Again, not mukta is misleading, but was fully enom and amuchan. And that famous case, which we've spoken about many times, is what we're talking about over here. The heptek, the reason that it's mukta, is because it's mukta machos chisar and kis. You've set it aside for business purposes and you don't want anybody fooling with it. You don't want anybody moving it around either, because then how's the robot going to find it? So basically, that is much more than stam. You've decided not to use it, or you dumped it in your garage. That is something where there is a specific maisa that they can place to put it into a position where it's clear that it's not something that's part of your Shabbos activities, so that it's enam namucha. Now the question is, what would it take in terms of your das? Remember, again, this entire sugya has been about the amount of attention that you can give something. What would it take for you to change something, according to Rabbi Shimon, which was set aside because it was Muktzamach was Chisar and Kis, and had to flip it around because of something that you did or perhaps just thought that would make it not Mukta? So this is literally the mirror image of what we were discussing before. Now, obviously, this would be true according to Rabbi Yehuda as well, but even Rabbi Shimon here, it's amazing that we'd have to go to the opposite extreme to figure out what would be non-mukta if it were already something that was shel heptek. So, Tana Rabba Bar Chana Kameda Rav, we have this brisa, where you have chariot shel dekel shigdaran la'etzim. You'll remember that in Hebrew, there's a different word for every type of harvest. So the word for harvest of date trees is called gidur. So gidur here is being used in the, not that you've harvested the dates, but rather you have cut down branches in order to use for the wood. But that's still, the word gidur would still apply to that. So if you cut down the branches of a palm, a date palm, obviously, that you're using for wood. So you want to use it in your fireplace. V'nimlach aleim b'yeshiva. One decided he's going to use it to sit down. If he's going to use it on Shabbos, he needs to tie them into bundles that make it clear this is no longer meant for the fireplace. This is meant for me to sit down on. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel omer, there's no need to tie them. It's just enough the fact that you changed your mind. Because again, the issue of muktzah is the question of da'ato. So if da'ato was on them, what would be the need to do an act? Now, who tanila? It was Rabbi Bar Bar Chana that had quoted this braita, and he actually, when he quoted it, he said, you should know that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. There is no need to do anything before Shabbos in order to establish that these are no longer set aside for non-Shabbos use, which was the norm at that time, to use it for firewood. Itmar, so among the Amoraim, we also find a machlokas, that not necessarily does everybody agree with Rabbi Baruch Hanna. Rav Omer Kosher. Rav says, you wanted to use it on Shabbos? These things are mukta unless you do something. So you're going to have to tie them into these bundles of wood that are suitable for sitting on before Shabbos. And Shmuel actually said the same thing that Rabbi Baruch Hanna said. It's enough that you just choshev. All you need to do is decide in your mind that you're going to be using this for Shabbos. Rav Asi says, you don't have to have anything in your mind for Shabbos, because mukta is not necessarily, says Rav Asi, that the intent is to use it on Shabbos. Mukta, in terms of its usage, would simply mean that you have indicated that it is a different type of thing, which would have been doable on Shabbos. So let's say you sit on these very pieces of wood on Erev Shabbos. You didn't say a thing about Shabbos. You weren't thinking about Shabbos. You didn't change anything. But the fact is you went ahead and sat on them. Well, once you sat on them, that's enough. So if you were Yoshev, if you sat on them, Erev Shabbos, Afa Pishalochi Sher, Afa Pishalochi Shev, you weren't thinking about Shabbos, but that has already changed the status of these things because that shows clearly that you are using them, Lamaisa, to sit on. So if they're a chair, a seat of some kind, so then they're obviously not Mukta. Okay? So now this is not the same as the issue of something that would be just the question of the Mochin that we had before. So the issue of here is that some of these Amorayim are more machmer than we are, and some by the Mochin, and some are less, meaning like Ravasi, all you need to do is sit down on them. Okay, so there are obviously different aspects of, and this is why this is important to work out, there are clearly different aspects between the cases of the Chori Yoshel Dekel and the case of the Mochin, because what we could say is, on the side to say that they're more chomer, that's because choriot are certainly much less meant to be sat on than Mochin are to be used for insulating. So in terms of the standard usages that you would imagine that you're going to be making with something on Shabbos, we ought to be more machmir in figuring out how we could make a choriot, a dekel, suddenly usable on Shabbos than we would be on Mochin. But on the other hand, there is the issue of the haktsah for the marketplace. Remember that the Mochin in those days were valuable. People would be less likely to be mafkir them, as we said before. What, just because you need them for hatmanas, you're going to give up on your beautiful box of fluff that everybody keeps to be able to make material out of? No way. Okay, but when it comes to the questions of Chori Yoshel Dekel, what's the big deal? So you change firewood to a chair? Does that really matter as much? Then that means we have elements that need to be taken into consideration, and in terms of Rav versus Ravasi, go tend in opposite directions. So do we look more to what it was that made it Mukta, or do we look more to what it is that makes it Mistaber to use on Shabbos? Those are both different ways of analyzing what is the primary consideration, the level of the haktsah or the ease with which it would be used differently. That's the machlokas here. In any event, the question over here is, let's try to work out the braisa that we had before with the machlokas Rav, Shmuel, and Ravasi, because Bishlema, Rav is going according to the Tanakhama, right? I mean, the Tanakhama said, look, you're not going to be able to use it on Shabbos unless you tie it. That's what Rav said. So that's good. Shmuel was also good because Shmuel was going on Libet of Shem ben Gamliel, who said, no, you don't need to tie it. It's enough to think about it. But Ravasi doesn't seem to be going according to anybody because everybody else was, say, both the Tanakam and Rav Shem ben Gamliel were demanding that you need to do something. I mean, either you need to be Chishev Aleihem or you need to have done an act which shows them already to be Miyuchet for that thing. Truth is, you're right, but Ravasi does have another Tana, a Tana who does not appear in that original Braita. And where is that? The Tana. Yotzin bepokorin ubetzipa. So you're allowed to go out with something that you want to be using as a bandage. So this could be either linen, or the raw linen, the flax that was combed. You know what they used to use to wrap the etrogim in before they came up with the idea of foam? This is a big piece of raw flax, and you could use that as a bandage, basically, because there's no din of refuah on a bandage, because a bandage is merely a protection. It doesn't actively do anything in terms of curing, and therefore the gezeira about shichuk samamanim, that you may come to actually make a medication, is not applicable. So you only have the problem over here about whether this is something that is part of its normal usage for Shabbos or whether it would be mukta. So if you've got this combed linen or you've got this combed wool, if you had bisman shetziva b'shemen u'krachan b'mishicha, so if you had put them into oil and you had tied a string to them that allows you to tie it around a wound, So then putting oil around it allows them not to be scratchy and so on, to be more protective. But if lotzi on beshemet, if you hadn't dipped them in oil, or you didn't tie a string around them, then ein yotzin behem, you can't go out with them, not because of the idea of the refua, but because they were muksa. Ah, but look at this. Im yotze behem shah achat mivod yom. If you had used it even a little bit as a bandage, or this, of course, was the original face mask. You tie a little bit meshicha around the sides, right? So if you'd used them a little bit before, during Friday, then mutar latzeit behem, exactly what Rabasi said. All you need to do is indicate on Erev Shabbos, even without even thinking you were going to use it on Shabbos. It has nothing to do with being koveyed for Shabbos. The issue to look at is the kvias of its use, not your thoughts about Shabbos. The truth is that this is something that we're going to see in the Mishnah later on. Because it says over there, akash shagabe amita, if there's straw that's on a bed, lo yinane obiado, you're not, it's mukza, because in those days they used to use straw for fuel. So actually it's brought, the Mishnah Berurah brings, nowadays we do not use straw as fuel, therefore none of this is relevant, because why would straw be mukza? If you got straw on the bed, then it's basically usable as a mattress or whatever, but it certainly isn't mukza for some iser use on Shabbos. But in those days it was. So you can't move it with your hand. However, remember that we said that if you're metaltel kila achar yad, or tiltol min hatzad, is considered to be mutter. And because of that, you can simply lie down on it and move it around with your back. And that way you fluff it up and you make it comfortable, smooth it out, and you make it comfortable to lie on. By the way, I had promised Rabarnea earlier that I would clarify the difference between the usages of tiltul min hatzad and tiltul kala achar yad. And the truth is they're referring to very different aspects. The din of tiltul min hatzad is the halacha. And the idea of kila achar yad is the modality. So therefore, that the reason this is a great place to point it out is that Rashi has two different perushim on this. Here he says, gufo is because that would be kila achar yad. Elsewhere, Rashi says, mipnei shetiltu menatzad is mutter. But you see the difference. In other words, the way you do it is called kila achar yad. But what the heter is to do, kila achar yad, is the fact that anything, and that minatzad is applicable also to other malachas as well, anything that is done in a way that is abnormal is considered to be not, the deraisa would be not us, not mutter, but it would not be chayev. And in the case over here of muksa, we end up paskening, halakha lamaisa, that you are allowed to move it in this unusual fashion. So therefore, we see over here, if you have kash alamita, you can move it, not with your hand, but with your body. But, aval imahaya alav ma'achal nebehima, let's say that it was miyuchat for animal feed. Oshaya alav karasadin miba'odyom, or maybe during the daytime, you had lain down on the couch, so it still had a pillow on it or whatever. At that point, it's enough. So Shmaminam, why is that enough? Because you see, it doesn't say anything over here about your deciding to use it on Shabbos. It just says if there was a pillow on it, and obviously it had been used, that it would be okay. So Shmaminam, exactly what Rabasi says, you do not require a conscious commitment to use something on Shabbos. You need more effectively, all that needs to be done is to deal with the yichud of what this was set aside for. Anyway, who then is the Mandi Yomar, that's the Tanna Kamma, that argues with Rav Shimon Gamliel, and he says, no, you've absolutely got to tie it, which was the way that Rav Paskin. Who is that? Says Rabbi Chanina bar Akiva, says the Gemara, it's Rabbi Chanina ben Akiva, because how do we know that? Because when Rav Dimi came, he said over that Zairi had quoted Rabbi Chanina, not Rabbi Chanina ben Akiva, but Rabbi Chanina, who said that once Rabbi Chanina ben Akiva came to a place, and he found exactly our case. Our case was that there were these big, by the way, a choriot of a dekel is something that we don't see all that often. A choriot of a dekel basically is what happens to a lulav when it's left for a long time on the tree and nobody cuts off the lulav. The lulav starts branching and hardening. so that it becomes similar to the branch of other types of trees. And that is called a chorios. It becomes very, very hard. It's like wood. At that point, you could actually burn it. So that's what we're talking about over here. So he found those that were taken down. This is the lashon of harvest. So they were harvesting the tree for wood, so to speak. That is firewood, not building wood. And he tells the Talmidim, listen, go out there and chishvu, everyone should have in mind that we need to use those branches tomorrow on Shabbos because a lot of people are going to be coming. Now, lo yadana ibeta mishteh havi o beta evel havi. I'm not sure whether the issue over there was that when he told them that they have to go outside and think about sitting on it in order to be able to sit on it the next day. So it could very well be that the reason that he was doing that was because something unusual had happened. I don't know. Maybe a lot of people were coming. I can't remember whether it was, maybe it was a Beit HaAvel and they expected a lot of people to come. But apparently what Ziri was saying is there was some extenuating circumstance. V'davka Beit HaAvel or Beit HaMishteh de Tridei. So it's only that he allowed chashiva alone. Just think about it. You don't have to actually tie them up. It was because we were dealing with preparations in a Beit HaAvel or in a Beit HaMishteh, whatever the case was, but those were extenuating circumstances that allowed us to be semech just on chishuv. But if it wouldn't have been for those circumstances, apparently he would have told them, okay, normally I would have insisted that you actually have to tie them. And that would be the shita of the Tanakhama here that argues on Reb Shimon ben Gamliel. Omer of Yehuda, another issue of something that normally would certainly be considered to be muktzah, and that's just stomp dirt. If a person brings in a full bag of dirt, and he brings it into the house before Shabbos, he can use it for all of his needs. Now, those needs could be a child does his thing on the floor or whatever, so you need it to cover over the floor, right? So, Dorash Marzutra, Mishmeta Marzutra Rabba, that where is this mutter that reviewed his matir? Only if you put it in a particular place. Sheyichad lo keren zavit. You didn't put it stam on the ground. But if you put it stam on the ground, then it remains muktzah because it just becomes sort of extension like the floor. Omer Rabbonin kameder of Papa, this apparently is going only aliba Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Because according to the Rabbanan said, you have to do something. They said you have to tie the choriochel dekel. Would you not have to do something with the dirt in order to make it roy for Shabbos and not just be miyachid at Karen Zavit? Because if you're miyachid at Karen Zavit, the only issue that you've done is indicated that you want to use it and you made sure that it wasn't bottle in general to the floor. By the way, the Reb Kiveger points out over here that where the floor is not made of dirt, you might not even need that because then it's not going to be bottled to the floor, obviously, wherever you put it. There's a little pile of dirt on top of your tiles. Why would that be bottled to the floor? Okay, but that's a side point. But the issue over here seems to be that it's sufficient to indicate with your dot and not to have to do a maisa. Omar lo Rav Papa, that is incorrect. Because this could be true even according to the Rabbanan. The Rabbanan talked about doing a maisa where there's a maisa to be done, obviously. So in other words, if you got a bunch of loose pieces of wood, in order to be able to sit on them, there's something to be done. Put them into a pile and tie them so that they become comfortable to sit on. Now, you tell me what it is you expect to do with the dirt to make the dirt more comfortable, for heaven's sakes. So obviously what the Rabbonim were saying was not that in all circumstances it's the getter of like Tumah V'Taira, that something is only Yorid L'Dei Tumasai. If there was a Maisa together with a Makshava, Yotzi B'Dei Tumasai rather, with a Maisa and a Makshava, that isn't the point. The point is that when something calls for an act, it's not enough to simply think about it. But if something doesn't call for an act, like dirt, midi de bar avida ba maisa, yes, that they said you have to. But over here, midi de lo bar meavid be maisa, use nothing as much as you could do with the dirt. There they never said that you got to do more than just have your das on it. And therefore the das would be sufficient. Now, the question is whether everybody would agree what Rav Yehuda is saying about the dirt. It seems to actually be a machlokes tanoim about whether the Rabbanan would indeed go along with the idea that something that doesn't have an action that you could do with it would be sufficient to have a machshava, because that's a chiddush. I mean, how do you know that it doesn't actually mean that the concept of a haktsah to be used is just as important as the haktsah not to be used, Aliba de Rebbe Shimon, where there was an act that changed the situation into creating it into an unusable state, and so on, like we had the case of the grogrot and the tzimukim, right? I mean, it's not at all obviously true that just because there's nothing to do with it, therefore the Rabbanim would go along with Rav Yehuda's insistence that even they would be meida. I'm not so sure about that. And in fact, it seems to be a machlokas tanoi, because the question over here is, how can you polish your silver becher on Shabbos? So it says, Bekol chafin et hakelim, you are allowed to use a rub on all types of utensils except for using a tartar rub on klei kesef. Klei kesef were often cleaned with rubbing them with tartar, which is the deposits at the bottom of a wine barrel. And that was a abrasive. So besides polishing, silver is very easily abraded. And because of that, you would be over on the Isra of Memacha on Shabbos, which is abrading skin to be able to remove the hair and so on, all types of things like that. So what you would be doing with the silver, therefore, would end up, because it's so soft, you'd be scraping it smooth. So you'd be using, so to speak, the equivalent of a very fine kind of sandpaper, and that you're not allowed to do even with your eyes. So you can't use that on silver. But that means that if you had neter or you had sand, that those are not abrasive enough to shine the silver, and that would be mutter. But there's another brisa that says that you're not allowed to use neter, and you're not allowed to use sand. Now, there's obviously a machlokas here, and I would suggest that the machlokas is basically the machlokas in whether Rabbi Yehuda was correct in saying that the Rabbana would be meida. Because look, what we could say is, the mar savar be'inan ma'aseh. So one of these brises holds that you can't use the neter or the chol because it's muktzah. So the fact that you may have set it aside in your mind to use is no different than setting aside a bunch of dirt to be able to use on Shabbos. And we disagree with what Rav Yehuda claimed, that everybody is meida, that a bunch of dirt that I don't have anything to do with would be okay just to be meyachid in my mind. Masha Einkein, those who are matter using anything but the tartar, they apparently hold that just thinking that you're going to use it on Shabbos is efficient. So, mar savar lo be'ina ma'aseh. No, not necessarily. I mean, there's so many other issues that it could be over here. Maybe this is just the old question of dover she'eino mitkaven. Maybe one man d'omer is going like Rabbi Yehuda, and one man d'omer is going like Rabbi Shimon. So then the idea would be rubbing the silver, using the neter or the chol. It's certainly possible that this silver will end up being rubbed down, even by sand, and therefore you would be over on a deraisa if you hold like Rabbi Yehuda. Now, it's certainly not a psik reisha, but it could happen. So according to Rabbi Shimon, what do I care if it could happen? If it's not a psik reisha, that's not your kavana. Mashenkin, according to Rabbi Yehuda, even if it's not a psik reisha, davar she'eino mitkaven, you're chayev on. So maybe that's the machlok, it's very simple. And that would be, oh, Rabbi Shimon, the yomer davar she'eino mitkaven is mut. Okay, wait, let me just see if that works out. You're now claiming that the braita that was matir using the chol and the neter is going aliba de Rabbi Shimon. Well, I got a problem, because if you continue reading that braita, it says, but you cannot use neter v'chol to rub your hair. Now, why not? I mean, if it's, according to Rabbi Shimon, I know for a fact, allows you to use neter v'chol to rub your hair on Shabbos. How do I know it? Not because he said anything about Shabbos, but because he said something about a nazir, which is a nazir any day of the week, is similar to me and you on Shabbos, right? Because, I mean, he's not allowed to take off any of his hair. So if this stuff would be of necessity, a depilatory, he wouldn't be allowed to use it. And yet, it says in the Mishnah, that nazir chofef umifasfes, have a lo sorek. A nazir is allowed to rub his hair, and he's even allowed to use his fingernails to scrub it, using exactly the issues that we're talking about over here, which is done with neter v'chol. And he could be mefasfes. Rashi learns mefasfes means to sort of spread his hair out and give it like, a, you know, air it out a little bit. And that would be mutter. And he can't comb it. If he combs it, that's going to be a problem. Because if he combs, then for sure, he's going to be detaching looser hairs. So obviously, this is going on Libet Rabbi Shimon. So apparently, then Rabbi Shimon would be matir on Shabbos to use it for silver, which is exactly the same, to use it for your hair, which is exactly the same thing as the nazir. So the truth is, I think that the analysis was wrong. The Braithot are not discussing the difference between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda. Actually, both prices go on Libet Rabbi Yehuda. And apparently there's different opinions as to what Rabbi Yehuda would have said in these cases. That's all. One is the question whether Rabbi Yehuda was cheshesh, that there's a chance of gorir. And he said, therefore, it's usher. And the other Braita was going even a little Rebuta, but that Rebuta holds that it's so unlikely that it's not even considered to be a Dover Shenim is Kavain. And because of that, it was mutter. Okay, so now you're saying it's going a little Rebuta. So now go all the way to the end of the Braita, okay? The same Braita gave you trouble with now. The Braita now doesn't work out according to Rebuta because the last part of the Braita says that you are allowed to wash ponov yodov viraglov mutar. So you would be allowed to use, you said that you can't use it to wash, to shampoo with, right? Or to wash your head. But you can wash your face and your hands and your feet. Now, how do you explain that? Okay? I mean, if you're telling me that this is going to lead to Rabbi Yehuda, I mean, certainly it is possible using these types of things, even on your hand and feet and face, they will take off hair. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, that possibility is sufficient to answer it, even if it's a Dover Shen Miskaven. So, Hama Aber Seyar. Okay, what it means is maybe this is a cotton. So, cotton doesn't have any hair on his face. Or maybe it's referring to a woman. Or maybe it's referring to somebody who's sterile, who doesn't have a beard, who doesn't have much body hair, and therefore there's no problem of using it on Panaviyana Viragala. I don't know, but I mean, the bride's got to be somebody. So if there's a difference between the hair on the head and the face and the hands, I mean, obviously there's a difference, okay? Whatever that difference is there certainly are cases where it's going to be different. Anyway, Rav Yehuda, said there's other things, by the way. One of the things that was used in those days as an abrasive, remember women always abrade the skin to make it look, you know, red and, you know, what do they call that today? Those facial masks?
Exfoliating.
Yeah. Thank you. Yes, an exfoliating. Exactly. So they would use crushed bricks. So a crushed brick would be just the right consistency for that. And afra levinata is mutter, even for a man who has a beard. And it's not considered to be something that's going to take off hair. And Omer of Yosef, kuspa de yasmin chori. Kuspa de yasmin means leftover ground sesame. And Omer Rava, afar pilpili chori. Also crushed peppers are also good. Omer of Sheshes, and using barda is fine. What the heck is barda? Omer of Yosef, that's a famous exfoliant. And it's made out of 1/3 ahala, which are aloes, and 1/3 hadasim, and 1/3 violets, or some say it's a clover. Omer of Nechemya bar Yosef, kol echad aleka ruba ahala shabri dami. Look, honestly, I don't care about what the specific ingredients are, as long as less than the rov is ahal. Okay, if it's less than the rov, it's mutter. The problem over here is the ahal, which does actually act as an effective depilatory if you've got even up to a half. Okay, so the machlokas is, do we need to have a third, or can it even go up to a half? By me name of Sheshes, are you allowed to be potseya zeitim b'shabbat? Could you take olives and beat them up? You smash them against the rock, and this makes them softer and sweeter to eat, although the olives, they certainly don't like it very much. Well, that's really not the problem. But the problem is that it causes a certain loss of the foods. So Rav Sheshes said, what do you mean? I understand what makes you, you're questioning only on Shabbos because obviously you're taking into consideration the issue of Hachanas Eichlin and Tikkun Eichlin. I don't know why it's mutter to do this during the week. It seems to me that it's inappropriate use of food because Kesavar Mishum Hefsid Ochlin, since you're going to waste some of it. So because of that, it's going to be a waste of food. Okay, there's a whole other explanation that some of the Rishonim bring from the Gaonim, that the issue over here was Lifsoa Zaysim was part of the previous discussion, which makes a lot more sense. It was part of the previous discussion. It meant to be Potsea Zaytim in order to use the mush as a kind of defoliant or as a soap. And he was dining. That's called Hefsid Ochlin. You don't take good things. By the way, they do make good soaps. You'll notice out of olives, you know. So they sell those soaps. They charge a lot for them. So who is Mater doing that and wasting during the week? Wait, so then Reb Sheshi disagrees with Shmuel. Shmuel says a person's allowed to use even bread and koshke and other okhla, but even bread that have this tremendous chashivas, you can do anything you want with it if you need it. That's because, says the Gemara Pat, if you're going to use the bread, he's talking about a kind of usage that's not going to make the bread disgusting, but beating up the olives like this turns it into a mush, which people are not going to feel comfortable eating once it's going to be turned into something that's usable as soap. A Meimar Marzutra of Ashi were sitting together, and they brought this barda, which we said that the barda was okay as long as the mixture is either less than, is up to a third ahal or up to half ahal. Anyway, a Mema Ravashi, they took the ahal and they washed with it. Marzutra refused to. So they said to him, why are you refusing? Don't you hold what Reb Shesha said that barda is mutter? Omar lo hu Rav Mordechai. So now we suddenly find out Rav Mordechai was hiding over there somewhere. So Omar lo Rav Mordechai, hold on, guys. There's a different issue over here, okay? Don't push Marzutra on this. Let me tell you something, that Marzutra would not even use barda on the weekdays. Forget about on Shabbos. So therefore, you don't embarrass him by putting him in this position over here. He holds that you're not allowed to do the kind of things that seem to be acting like a woman. So it's usher for a man to utilize any type of beauty tool or grooming tool that is feminine, because that's the part of the Isser of Lo Yilbash Gever. And therefore, he didn't do it because of that, because there is a Braita that says, Begarer Adam Gildei Tso'a V'Gildei Makah She'al B'Saro B'Shvil Tsa'aro. You're allowed to scrape off filth, okay, that's on you, because it's giving you pain. Tosis points out, giving you pain for sure includes embarrassing you. There's no pain bigger than embarrassment. So if you don't want to walk out, I mean, obviously that's mitzayah him. But if you just do it because you want to look beautiful, then because a male is not supposed to be thinking about how beautiful he is. But they disagree, obviously. So inu kaman savrua. So who did Amema and Ravashi hold like in this issue, since they held it was only a question of using on Shabbos and was a shayla of using Allah? Ki hodetanya. Rochetz adam panav yadav v'raglav b'chol yom b'shvil kono. You're mechuyev to wash yourself every day. The Rambam brings this lahalacha, as the Reb Kiveger points out over here, in Hilchas Tfila, in which the Ravid says, where the heck does the Rambam get the idea that you're not allowed to daven shachris unless you washed ponav yada viraglav? I don't understand where he gets that from. Obviously, says Rav Kiveger, he gets it from here. He understands that it means that you have a chiv and that you're not ready to face HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what it says. Ko po'ala Hashem l'maneu. So it's also b'shvil kono. So the b'shvil kono means, in order that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should be mitkabed in his presence, you slob. So why are you walking into tefillah like that? So according to the Rambam, this would actually be a chiyuv. Everything that Hashem created is basically in his coven. And Rashi points out that if you look really beautiful, this is amazing, so then people will be able to make the bracha, Baruch Shekacha Lo Ba'olamo, right? So, because you're supposed to make a bracha on beautiful things, and that shows that the whole idea is the Kvod Shamayim. And therefore, whatever a person does to make himself look beautiful is dafka kovet for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Omer. Now getting to the next piece of the Mishnah. So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said, it's not good enough to take out the gizim, the mochim, by lifting up the cover, which you, if you recall, is not considered to be a basis, the davara asur, even if the pieces of wool on it are not really mutter for moving. And the reason is because, as Rashi explained, a cover is by definition not a basis. So that's not good enough, however, said Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, because I'm nervous. If you're going to take out things in that way, so you're going to pick up the cover, and then everything's going to fall to the side. Then you're going to take out the cholent pot. And then what happens when you want to put the cholent pot back in? So there's a chance, isn't there, a good chance, that all of the pieces of fluff that were around the pot are going to fall into the hole when you take out the pot. I know what you're going to do. You're going to go back in there, and you're going to make the hole again. So if you do that, you're going to end up moving it b'yadayim. For all intents and purposes, once you take out the cholent pot, man, you might as well just be mater moving the muktzah. Okay, we're not going to do that. Others learned that the problem is that it's going to be nechshav, a new hatmana. Because, look, couldn't you move it kila achar yad? Let's say you would put the pot in, right, and you would twist the pot around until all of the pieces go to the side. So that would be moving kila achar yad, and we said before that kila achar yad is mutter. That was the whole idea of the first part of the Mishnah. But the problem over there is that that's not just called moving, because what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to move it around back and forth until it sits in the place directly. So then that would be called actually creating a new place to be matmin in. It's not just a question of being metal to the muktza. Okay, in any event, I'm just bringing it up that we should be aware of the issues that are over here. And because of that, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, we have to be geyser. Now, let's understand the machlokas. Amar Rav, Amar Rav Chiya bar Rashi, look, everybody is beda. If in reality the hole was wrecked because all the pieces for the side fell in, the Rabbanan aren't arguing with the question. They agree. You're not allowed to put it back in. So imnit kalkala hagumash asur lahachzir. That's for sure. The machlokas over here is if lechora nothing happened. What do you mean if nothing happened? V'chachomim omrim no tel umachzir. Tell me what that's talking about. That what? Echidami. That nothing went wrong? Well, so obviously. What do you mean? If nothing went wrong, so how could anybody argue with you? Shaprakami rabbonim. What, Rabbi Elazar is going to disagree that you're not allowed to put something back into a davar she'eino mosif heva? Why not? Nobody ever asserted that. There's no iser of chazora in a davar she'eino mosif heva. So then they're right. So then what they must have been saying is, no, we hold that it's okay even if something went wrong, and even if nitkalkala aguma. So we see that Rabbanan hold that you are allowed to make the place again. No, you're misunderstanding it. Of course, the Mishnah is talking about where it was not nitkalkel and where you do not have to move anything. And the point over here is up front. Do you need to worry? That's the question. Do you need to worry about the problem if it was nitkalkel? I'm telling you that if Lamaisa it was mitkalkel, the Rabbanu would not allow it. What they said in the Mishnah over here was, don't worry about it being mitkalkel. What are you going to tell a guy he can't pull out his cholent pot? He's got to move the whole thing and let everything pour out of the pot, the box. But come on. Because what? Because maybe if he took the cholent pot out, then he's going to end up moving it b'yadayim. I mean, come on. I mean, the whole thing is basically a highly overrated issue over here. I mean, we're talking about something which is a drabbanan. The guy will either be makbid on it or not makbid on it. He's going to make a gzeir that maybe somebody could come to be over on the gzeir. We're not going to do that. That's the shayla. Mar savar cheshashin, shemanit kalkala gumas, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is being very machmir. What happens if something may take place and then you'll end up moving the gzeir tzemer? But the rabbanan would say, we're not worried about it. Obviously, if it happens, you're not allowed to move it. Om Ravuna. Now, this is another issue that has to do with moving things in this fashion. similar to the way that you would be moving things by picking up the pot off the cholent pot, top of the cholent pot, in a case where it's covered with these mochin. And we already discussed over here what the din is of dirt. And dirt, you would need to be able to be miyached it in its place and in order to be able to use it on Shabbos. So Amar Rav Huna, look, suppose you have some slikusta. Now, slikusta was a plant that they used in those days. It was very, very delicious smelling. I don't know what it is, but it would be used by rich people who could afford a slikusta. And what would you do with a slikusta is you would keep it in to dirt to keep it fresh, slightly moist. And then if you wanted to use it after a meal or to use it as a room deodorant, you would take it out. And after using it and shaking it a bit and smelling it or making a bracha on it, whatever, you put it back into the dirt. Now, the question is, Lagabe Shabbos, what would be the din of moving it in that dirt on Shabbos? Because Lechora, some of the dirt is going to be koveyed as mukta. Now, each time you're going to have to be moving the dirt. So the din is that datsa shalfa v'hadar datsa sharya. So if before Shabbos you put it into the dirt, and then you took it out of the dirt, and then you put it back into the dirt. So over there, we're not worried that you're going to be ending up making that hole and so on, because you already took care of it before Shabbos, and there's nothing new that's going to be moved, and now you're allowed to put it in and take it out without in any way changing the nature of the hole and moving the dirt around. So it's going to be a hole for the Salikusta. And over there, we're not worried. Even according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, since it's basically damp, we're not worried that the whole thing is going to collapse, you're going to pull it open again, and that's not Nogea, the Machlokas in our Mishnah. But if you didn't do all of that before, then to do just because you, the first time that you brought a fresh Salikusta, then you wouldn't be allowed to take it out of the dirt, because then you're going to be moving the whole thing. Okay, fine. All right, questions over here, by the way, how to understand the issue about whether we're dealing really with the problem of mukta or we're dealing more with the problem of chofer. That's already a shaila. Obviously, contextually, this is a mukta issue. Amar Shmuel, another thing that's similar to this, which is the reason that some suggest that it's not about mukta, is in the same way that if you got a knife and you're keeping this knife safe by putting it between the bricks in the kitchen. So imagine behind your stove, you've got these bricks where there's some places that the mortar between the bricks have fallen out. And so to keep the knife away from the kids, you put the knife into that hole, taking it out each time, right? So now, if you never used it before, you put it in right before Shabbos, you would not be allowed to take it out on Shabbos for the first time, because that would be, again, a problem of bonet, if this is chofer. So you can see why now we're using sort of a similar situation in the silikusta to the question that we had about the collapse of the hole. But each case would be on its own merits, whether it would be a shaila of chofer or a shaila of bonet or of soiser. So over here, it's the same thing. If you put the knife into the wall before Shabbos, took it out, and then put it back in, then you know that you've got that hole already safely made. But if not, it would be usur. Mar Zutra, and some say it was Rav Ashi who said, that if you have gordita de kane shaperdami, which is very interesting, if you've got like a plant that is growing with thick reeds, so it's got like a bunch of very, very thick branches at the bottom, you're within three tefachim of the ground, so there's no problem of using something that is a mechuber, because within three tefachim, it's considered to be part of the ground. You can stick your knives between the branches and support it by the branches, and you do not have to worry that if I'm going to stick the knife in, necessarily I'm going to cut something or shave off the bark or whatever. That would also be mutter. So you could, if it's dense enough, you don't have to worry about mimachek, is the way Rashi understands it. So again, that would be consistent with the chofer, bona, mimachek, because we had discussed mimachek before when it came to the silver and when it came to the question of using it on your face. We were also talking about more than issues of mukta. We were talking about ending up doing some type of iser on Shabbos. Okay, Rabosai, that was very lovely being with you. So what we've done is we've, as I said, we're looking at the opposite now of what started us off. What started us off was the question of, in Rabbi Shimon, how much would it take for you to make something muktzah by being mikatzea et midatcha? Today's daf was about how much it would take to make something non-muktzah by bringing it back into your das. This obviously would be true according to Rabbi Yehuda as well, for sure. The question is, even muktzah, makos, chisar, and kis, which we were talking about the case of the heptek, which is the Amazon storage, we're over there, we understand you got to do something in order to make that not muktzah. So we had basically three shitas and then a fourth possibility. So the three shitas were, you need to actually do something, such as the case of tying the chariot hadekel. You need to at least consciously determine that the use will be for Shabbos, or it needs to have been used, even if you never thought of using it for Shabbos, but it needed to have been used once before Shabbos. Now, the other issue that we brought as a subcategory of that problem was whether it's actually true that according to those who are being machber and claiming you need to tie it, would that apply even to something where there isn't really anything to do? Or would it be enough just to be miyachidit? Now, what we found out was that if there are extenuating circumstances, so then it would be enough to be miyachidit, even according to those who are being machmer. But if there were no extenuating circumstances, like the case of the Beit Eivel and the Beit HaMishteh, then it would seem that we certainly have a braita that is against what Rav Yehuda's heter was, that every would, even the Tanakama would be matir, just being miyachidit in your das. Okay, so this is like a whole wonderful mirror image of the sugyas that we had before. We were talking about the need to put something into the ground, take it out of the ground, put it back into the ground, in order that there shouldn't be any kind of problem of moving something on Shabbos, which was going to move the afar. And we said you have to make, it was a question whether it was also Shaila of being chofer, you have to make the hole properly, and so on. So Rav Katina today, three lines up from the bottom, most of Rav Katina to Yufta, to the cases that we had before, where something needs to be done before Shabbos. Atomein lefet, utznono, tachat agefen. So suppose people want to put something in a place where it's going to keep cool and fresh. So what they would do is they would put it actually underneath some loose dirt. So if you had turnips, you had what do you say it's not in English?
Radishes. Radishes.
Thank you. Yes. Or if you had some radish. So what they would do is they would put it in the ground underneath a geffen. Now, a geffen, that would be kiloya kerem if you planted it, right? But there's no problem in this case, because as long as ima yamiktzat alav begulin, as long as there's a little bit of the leaves that are left uncovered, you don't have any problem on any issue. Eino choshesh, you don't have to worry about it being kelayim because you're planting in a vineyard. You don't have to worry about planting, let's say, a shmita. You don't have to worry about taking off meiser and thinking, oh, maybe it grew a little bit when I put it in there. And, of course, here's the part that we're talking about, v'nitalin b'shabbat. You'd be able to take them out of the ground on Shabbos. And if that's the case, that should be exactly the same with the silikusta, which was that delicious smelling stuff we talked about yesterday. And it's clear from here that the only problem is that there should be a leaf sticking out that you can grab onto and you don't have to move the dirt with your fingers. But otherwise, you don't have to stick it in and take it out and stick it in again to make sure that it's loose. So apparently, to yufta, indeed, there is no basis for this chiyuv. This machlokas over here between the rishonim on the daf and some of the other rishonim, including ostensibly Rabbi Gon, who says that the din of the leaves sticking out was nogea all of the above. In other words, it was nogea kilayim, shmita, meiser, and so on, which Tosfos bitterly disagrees with, because obviously we can't be talking about over here that they took root, because if it took root, then it would be an issur d'oraisa to take it out on Shabbos. And of course, you would have to be worried about kilayim, shmita, and so on and so forth. So we're talking about anyway, you just stuck a carrot under the ground. That's not going to make it chayav as planting in Shemitah or make it Kiloya Kerem. And therefore, Tosfos and Rashi learned that the issue over here about the leaves sticking up was only Nogea, this last piece about Nitolim B'Shabbat, because on Shabbat you have to worry, well, how are you going to grip it with your fingers if you're going to have to be Meziz Afar Mimakomo, because we were only Matir till Min Hatzad. That wouldn't be Min Hatzad, that would be directly. Thank you so much for being here on a Mitzvah. I know it's difficult. Mitzvah Shabbos is tough. These are hours that are especially valuable hours. And what better way to use them than to have a Daf Yomi and to get a chance to start off Hinei El Yeshua Si, Eftach V'lo Efchad, Elio Hanavi. And we look forward to a wonderful week of Geula, of Binyan, Besuras Teves, and Kol Tov to everybody. Shavua Tov. Love you all so much.